William Booth Special Care Home, and the Regina Wisconsin Grace Hospice. And she's been responsible for both areas since 1997. And she has worked in various healthcare settings, both in Alberta and Saskatchewan. And she has a passion, and she will share that with you. And she's been very instrumental in the initial vision of hospice and other areas of our health care. And so we're going to call on Ivy now to come forward and share with you.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you can hear me. I'll try to speak as loud as I can. If you don't hear what I'm saying, then please feel free to, somebody here said they'll go like this, so that'll help. Okay, so you need to know that I don't need any pomp and ceremony, okay? I'm happy with just exactly what we have here today, because that sort of defines my type of leadership. I'm just going to, he went through this. So William Booth Special Care Home is owned and operated by the Salvation Army. And is anybody here familiar with William Booth Special Care Home? You've heard of William Booth? So William Booth Special Care Home is an affiliate of the Regina-Qu'Appelle Health Region. So that means that we provide services, and the health region purchases services through us for the residents and patients in Regina. But we are owned and operated by the Salvation Army. And people ask me, who is the Salvation Army? Well, the Salvation Army is, they say, is it a corporation? Is it a church? What is it? Is it a social organization? And in fact, what it is it's all of those things. But the two main areas is that it is a Christian church. It has 40, it's the 78th largest denomination in the world, and it has over 4 million members. And they call them adherents, but they're soldiers in the Army. And so if you know the Salvation Army, you'll see there's majors, and I learned a lot going to the Salvation Army, believe me. And so there's majors, and so if you are a member of the church, you'll see the Salvation Army people wearing a navy suit, not like this, because I'm not, but a major would be wearing one that has the epaulettes on the arm. And it's active in 127 countries. It was 125 the last time I did this, but they've opened up two more in other countries. They operate hospitals, hospices, men's retreats, and I'm happy to say that there are women hostels, because there's so many times that there aren't women hostels run by the Salvation Army. Most of them, people remember that it's usually the men's, like Waterston we have here. And they're also involved in emergency services. And this summer, when there were all of those fires up north, it was actually the Salvation Army that the government came and gave them funds to coordinate it, because they have such a good coordination. So they're really busy in a lot of different areas, and we're only one unit, and we're called a ministry unit, even though we are a healthcare facility. The first Salvation Army home was opened in Regina. And how many people know Byron Gate? It was just down here. It was opened in 1944, and that was really William Booth's first start. And it was right beside the city, the courthouse on McIntyre in Victoria. And it housed single men who were still ambulatory, and they just didn't have some place to live. And so the Salvation Army opened up a men's home there. And then from that, they decided to take people who needed a little bit more care, and then they opened up William Booth Special Care Home, which is on 50 Angus Road. We're one of 26 ministry units in Saskatchewan that the Salvation Army oversees. And so even though we're a healthcare facility, we're the only healthcare facility in Saskatchewan. There was one in Saskatoon, but it is now closed. But we are the only healthcare facility, but they have many, many, many other ministry units, such as food banks and Waterston. Again, like I said, is one of their ministries. We're one, when I talked about being an affiliate of the Regina-Qu'Appelle Health Region, we're one of the affiliates. And as you see, there's 10 different homes. Some of them are owned and operated, like Wascana is owned and operated by the region, but all these homes here are all independently owned and operated. So we have our own policies, our own procedures, and they purchase services from us. Our mission statement at the William Booth, it's very similar to any other long-term care facility, but there's a big difference here, is that the William Booth Special Care Home is to provide in the spirit of Christ, and that's the difference. Care and support for the well-being of residents, clients, their families, and staff. So we're a Christian facility. When we interview staff at our facility, we say that you don't have to be a Christian to work here, but you must be able to support the Christian activities. And so they know right up front, and so we actually never have a problem recruiting into our home. A vision statement. Now, sometimes people, especially staff, will say, a vision statement. What's a vision statement? Well, a vision statement really is exactly that. How do you want others to see you? And so our vision statement is that we want to be recognized as a care center of excellence, a healthy workplace for our staff, and a location where Christian love and compassion are shown. And so how can the staff know what that means? We made it very simple. Residents first, safety always, and mission central. All of our decisions, again, are founded on that, those Christian principles. This is a pictorial of that vision statement. As you see, we have our caregivers, we have the people we're caring for, but all our decisions are formed around our mission. We're guided by the Salvation Army values, which are compassion, respect, excellence, integrity, relevance, cooperation, and celebration. All of these are rooted in the three most important values of the Salvation Army, and that is salvation, holiness, and intimacy with God. Oh, just a second. Obviously, I touched something. I just have to get rid of it. Okay. And that means a personal relationship with God. Okay. Whoops, I went the wrong way. Oh, how come it's going backwards? Sorry. I must have touched something. Isn't that too bad? Oh, isn't that? Does anybody know what's wrong with this thing? This has never happened before. Okay, so I'll just continue on. So our philosophy of care, we believe in serving others. That's our main philosophy of care, is serving others. Those who come to our facility and for those that need outreach. We at William Booth look at the elderly and the long-term care, and we also in our hospice provide end-of-life care for the community.
You're covering your screen.
Am I covering the screen? Well, this is going to be really tricky. Okay, here. Okay. Isn't that too bad? I don't know why this doesn't work. Okay, there. Okay. We respond in a resident family-centered approach, and that's really important. You know, for many years it was always a resident approach, but, you know, we need to recognize that our care in long-term care is getting much heavier, and families have been a very important part of the resident's life and probably has been caring for them in their home. So we need to now come together and know that we're not going to take over for the family, but rather we will be in partnership with the family. And again, one thing that we always have to tell people, we are a publicly funded facility, and so we can only provide within our available resources. And so yes, we do provide individual care. We try to make sure that we are responsive, but we have to make sure that it never takes away from somebody else. And that's sort of my job, that, you know, that we can only do it within our available resources. One big feature that the Salvation Army has, and especially our home, is that we utilize a lot of community resources, and I see there's a couple people here that come to our home and provide some of the singing and the different activities that we have going on. Our home is has one of the best programs, and it's got for activities and recreation and bringing the community inside, and that is because we have wonderful staff that facilitate that. We try to provide a cheerful, family-oriented, non-threatening life, or safe environment, and I think that we do a pretty good job of that. A lot of times people talk about a Bill of Rights for residents, and we just think that sounds just terrible. A Bill of Rights, it sounds like you're in some sort of institution, maybe. So instead, what we call it is, it's our commitment to you. It's not that what you deserve, but rather what our commitment is to you, and we'll make sure that we do that, and I'm not going to go over that. Our programs, though, these are our programs. We have, at William Booth, we're not just a long-term care facility. I think we're the only one in the city that has all these programs. We have a long-term care program. We have a convalescent program, a hospice, palliative care, respite, and adult day support. And I'll just talk about those so that you can know how to access them. So our long-term care, it used to be long-term care, you could have level 1, 2, 3, and 4. In order to get into a long-term publicly funded facility these days, you have to be heavy care, which means level 3, 4. Everybody else is serviced in their home. And that's defined by the Saskatchewan Care Home Act. The convalescent care is, Barb, you could have come to our convalescent care. No, our convalescent care is really a wonderful program. We call it our subacute program. So for people who have either had total hips or total knees, if they've had a heart attack, or they're just not recuperating as quickly as they should in acute care, rather than staying in an acute care bed, we've opened up a unit that they can come to our place, and we also have a full physiotherapy area, which other long-term care homes don't have. And so we actually are helping the region to free up acute care beds. And our goal is to make sure that these people are successful and they go home. They don't go into a long-term care facility. So they come anywhere from 5 days to 6 weeks. And that is a wonderful program that has, it's 18 beds, that unit is 18 beds, and in those 18 beds we have between 200 and 250 admissions a year. So there's lots of turnaround, so people are successful and they're going home, and we're providing a good service. Hospice care, now this is near and dear to my heart. In 1992, the Salvation Army, one of the things the Salvation Army looks for, they don't want to replicate services, but they want to find gaps in services and then fill that gap. Because, I mean, if the government and other funding in other areas are providing services, then they're looking for some gap in the community that they can assist. And so in 1992, what happened is, there was a fellow who was HIV positive. And you can imagine, in 1992, well, nobody really wanted to take him into their long-term care home. And so the Salvation Army was approached and said, yep, we'll do this, but this is what we need. And a lot of it was just education. A lot of people needed education. And so from that time, then they kept on sending us people who were palliative and kept on sending us. And then the region had 2 beds at this nursing home and 2 beds at this nursing home and 2 here and 2 there. And we had 2. So we approached them in 2003 or something, and we said, if we can build a hospice, if we can build and get it furnished and we can do all this, will you give us the operational? Because that's the big key. You can build a building, but if you can't run it with staffing, that's the big expense. And then we showed them how much we could save them, and really people don't want to go to the hospital for end-of-life care. You know, they don't want to die in a hospital. They'd rather die at home. But if they can't die at home because their needs are too great, then they never had any other place to go but to go to Emerge and then get admitted, and usually to an off-service unit. And so they were the lost souls down the surgical floor, you know. So they said, okay, if you can build it, if you can furnish it, go ahead. So we went out and we formed partnerships. And we did this all in a year and a half. And we formed partnerships in the community, and these are our partners. We went to the Canadian Progress, Regina Wascana, and you've heard of the Festival of Trees. They came alongside and they helped us initially with some of the foundational money. And then we went to RPCI, which is Regina Palliative Care Inc., and asked them if they would furnish the place, and they said, yeah, no, that'll be good. And then the Salvation Army actually took a mortgage out. We took a mortgage out. And then we actually built the facility, and I'm happy to say the mortgage is paid off already, so that's good. And then the Regina Capel just had to give me some extra professional staff to get this going. It opened in 2005. It's 10 beds. In those 10 beds, clients range anywhere from age 20 to 90, 100. It doesn't matter. It's for people who normally, like you and I, are living in the community, and something happens to us, and now we're not in the long-term care facility, but we can't stay at home anymore because maybe our care needs are too great or the pain management. And so you can come to our hospice. And it's the only hospice in Saskatchewan. Now, 2005, I can't believe it's 11 years already. So 2005, we were the first hospice in Saskatchewan, and it's sad to say that we're still the only hospice in Saskatchewan. You know, there's Saskatoon is trying to get a hospice. PA and Moose Jaw, and they've been working hard. I think Moose Jaw might be on the cusp of it. But what happens is, so many times people think that you need to have a standalone hospice. And I need to tell you, a 10-bed standalone hospice, the Salvation Army has those, they're not functional, like operational. You know, it's too expensive to run one. And so what we did is we actually built out from our facility, and it looks like it's a standalone. It's got its own parking, its own entrance and everything, but I can resource off the whole facility, so it was very cost effective. And we've got other provinces coming now to look at how this is happening, because we're putting through like 200 people a year and into those 10 beds. And just think, those 200 people would be dying in an acute care bed somewhere down some hall on probably an off service area. There are 9 beds in the hospital that are palliative, but those beds are really meant for people that are still out in their home, and maybe they have a pain crisis, and they come back in and they stabilize them and they send them back home. But when they can't send them back home anymore, then they become a candidate for our place. Okay. Respite beds. These are very important too. We have respite beds. Are people familiar with respite? It's for people that are in the community, and maybe a family member wants to go on a holiday and they're taking care of somebody. You can actually apply and have your loved one come into the respite bed, and you get, I think, up to 4 weeks a year of care there. And so that's nice. And it's also nice for the person to come in, because they sort of get a feeling of what maybe long-term care is about. The adult day and evening program. This is the best kept secret in Regina, okay? We have got the largest, we used to call it adult day support, but we actually opened up in the evening because there's a need in the evening. So we're the only one in Saskatchewan, again, that operates 8 in the morning till 8 at night. We have 100 different individuals that access that, and they're people that are staying in their home, either being serviced by home care, or their family is taking care of them. And we are open 7 days a week, not Monday to Friday, because I always say healthcare is 7 days a week. And so it's $8.75 a day. And we have 40, so we have 100 different people that provide the service to, and some people come 7 days a week, some people come 2 days a week, some people come 1 day a week. And what we give them is an opportunity for socialization. They also luck out, because our big meal is at noon, so they get a lovely meal. And but we provide one-stop service. So people who are taking care of their loved one at home, they can get their immunization here. We do foot care, bathing, hair dressing. We just do everything, dressings, tube feedings. We do whatever you need. And then so that the person doesn't have to take them out again. One of the things I always say that, you know, so, but how are we doing? And one thing that we do is we do a lot of surveys, because I think surveys are very informational for me. And so I ask, you know, so how are we doing? Are we providing the service that we want to, in the spirit that we said in our mission statement? And these are the comments that I got, is that, you know, so what do you like about William Booth? And they say they like the friendly staff, they like the caring atmosphere, they like the Christian component. We're the only home. I feel very blessed every morning, because I can go out every morning at 9:30 and there's chapel. We have a chapel every single morning at 9:30, beautiful music. And I mean, where else can you be working in a healthcare facility and hear Christian music? We have a full-time chaplain who performs the services. But you know, the other thing is when she's not there, do you want to know who does the devotions? It's our staff. Now, you know, we're unionized, so isn't that something? But part of working with us is that you have to support the Christian activities, and they come along. And, you know, at one time, somebody had brought up that we were running kind of short, and they said, well, maybe we shouldn't do chapel every day. Maybe we should just do it a few days a week. It was the staff that came up and said, we'll do it. No, that's who we are. That's what we... So that's important. I think that's a good culture to have. The Salvation Army provides us with a full-time chaplain. We have a hairdresser on site, dietitian, foot care, and we have outings into the community. So how do you access long-term care facilities? And I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but it's a single access. So don't phone me, because it has to go through our wait list. And I, sad to say, our long-term care beds are 3-year wait list to get into our long-term care beds. But you know what? Don't lose faith, because we phone, and if you don't answer, then we move on. So you never know. Sometimes it's a little less. But there's in Regina Capel Health Region, a system-wide admission and discharge coordinator. And if you phone that number and say, I'd like to be assessed to see what kind of care needs I could get, you know, and maybe attend the day program, because the day program is a wonderful program. There's other services, and I think you had somebody here before from the House Call Program Initiative, and they've had many different initiatives in the Regina Capel Health Region. This is a new one, but they also can provide, at a very nominal cost, personal care, bathing, meals on wheels, respite, what else, dressing changes, emotional support, diabetic care, you know, a whole list. So you can also access, at that same number, home care, and I think the range is anywhere from $4.90 to $14. So, you know, it's very, very economical. Is there an age limit? A lot of times people say, oh, do I have to be a certain age? No, there's no, and it's only based on needs. And what is the cost? I think I told you what it was, and that's established through SASC Health. And how do you get referred? Now, this is an interesting thing. A lot of people don't realize that. They think a doctor has to refer you or a nurse. No, anybody can refer. I mean, Tom, you can refer Barb. Anybody can make a referral, and then it goes through that system, which is a good system. Because just think, before, you know, people would come and phone different places, and we'd never know who was the most needy in the community. They know who's most needy. And so if you need to be assessed, get assessed. And you just make a phone call, say, I'd like to be assessed. I'd like to know what kind of services could be available to me. Now, I'm just going to finish up here. As I said, we're a Christian home, and I just thought I'd tell you about how my role at William Booth and Regina Wascana Grace Hospice has impacted my personal and spiritual journey. And I want to share with you first a quick story. Am I running late? No? Okay, so, you know, the Super Bowl was this month, and I don't normally watch too much of it, and if I do, I only watch the game, but I don't watch the awards. But this year, they had the Man of the Year Award. I mean, they have it every year, but this is the first year I saw it. And it's called the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And it is given to someone who exemplifies a great human being, not only on the field, but off the field, and their contributions to their community. And Anquan Boldin of the San Francisco 49ers, whoever he is, I don't know, but anyways, he won the award. But what caught my interest was what he said when he received the reward. Did anybody see that? No? Okay. So what it said was, when I first got into the NFL, nobody could tell me anything. I was living the life. I had achieved my dream of one day making it into the NFL. But I soon realized that's not what life is all about. I realized my purpose in life was not to make it to the NFL and score touchdowns. God put me on this earth for something much bigger than that, and I realized and understand what my purpose is now. It's my prayer and my hope that I can live out the rest of my life honoring God and helping as many people as I can. Isn't that wonderful? So he received the Man of the Year. And I just, let me see. In Paul, he wrote, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself. And I thought, you know, he's bang on. He knows what Paul is talking about. So, you know, when I became this executive director, and I was asked, I actually didn't apply for the position, I was asked for this position. And, I was the first non-officer in the Salvation Army. They always have their officers as the executive director. And I was happy to see, you know, that, you know, they sort of saw my leadership skills. But that verse, remember the verse that we just looked at? I realized that it wasn't, I could have said, oh, great, I'm the executive director, woo-wee, you know. But no, what I was actually put there for a reason. And I believe that I was put there to use my skills to mentor others and create a culture of caring in a long-term care facility. Remember we talked about vision statements? Well, I thought, what's my vision statements? How do I want others to see me? And really, as a leader of a Christian organization, what kind of leader do I want to be? And really, what I want to be is a servant leader. And there's two different kinds of leaders. There are servant leaders, and there are those that want to serve themselves. And I didn't want to be that one. I wanted to be the one that serves others. A servant leadership is called to a higher standard. I knew immediately, and I tell staff that, you know, you're working in a healthcare facility, but you're working in a Christian healthcare facility. You are a representative of the Salvation Army, so we're always called to a higher standard. And so my role was not to make myself successful, but to make the staff successful. And so what does a true servant leader look like? They should be able to, at the end of the day, I should be able to step back and not even be there, and the place should run perfectly. And so I'm really doing myself out of the job, which is fine. I don't want to work anymore. No. And so, so you know what? And I have to tell you that I do not, there are some leaders that the place falls apart if they're not there. Well, they haven't done their job. They're not making the people who are doing the work successful. So that is a sign of a true servant leader, and I hope that I emulate that. I know that I'm away a lot. I work for the Salvation Army, not only at William Booth, but also across nationally. I'm on their ethics committee for the territorial, which is Canada. And I can be away, and I know, without a shadow of a doubt, that things will continue on the way that they are. Again, I always go back to this verse. I think this is a very powerful verse. Do nothing out of selfish ambition. So don't always look at yourself, but look at others. How do you make others successful? By serving others. And Matthew 25, it says, the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you do for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you do to me. And Hebrews, do not neglect hospitality, because through it some of us have entertained angels without knowing it. And this is the pictorial of it. Do you see this picture here? I love this picture. Here is a soup line. People are all standing there, and they're all kind of into themselves. They're not really looking at anybody else. And right in the midst is Jesus, and nobody's even noticed that, have they? So I always wonder, by the time he got to the front of that soup line, if the person who gave him his soup realized. And that goes back to that verse. So how has my role at William Booth changed my spiritual journey? Well, I'll tell you how it's changed it. It made me focus not on my own, but on others. The Salvation Army has a slogan, what we see what others don't. And look at this picture. This one has always stood out in my mind. Since I've worked with the Salvation Army, we see what others don't. What is my role working for the Salvation Army done in my spiritual journey? It's helped me to see better. To see those that I can serve in the community. Don't wait to have somebody ask you to do some service. Look for the service. And that's what we do. We look at gaps. We look at people who need something. And so this one right here is my favorite. And so a challenge for all of us, I guess, is to see others as an opportunity of service. I'd like to thank you. And if you have any questions. And that's one of our fellows there. And any questions? Comments?
You mentioned going through a system-wide. If I want to apply to William Booth, mm-hmm. through the system-wide, yeah. Can I specify?
Yes, you can. So anytime, and I've got to tell you that, there's a three-year waiting list, but get assessed, because it's from your assessment date. And a lot of people think it's from the time that you enter the system, and it used to be years ago, but no longer. So if you're assessed for home care, and they assess you as a level 3-4, and needing some services in your home, then they go back to that original date, even though you stayed in your home for another couple years. So that's how you do it. Okay? Yes?
I was wondering, for people who need long-term care, mm-hmm. or care that can't be provided, that the hospitals probably don't want. How many people reside in William Booth? How many people can you take? And you probably have a long waiting list.
Yeah, we have, it's an 83 bed facility, but we have 100 people in our day program.
Yes.
So we have about 150 on site every day. So about 150, and we have a 3-year waiting list to get into our long-term.
But the
convalescent care and the home and the hospice and our day program, those are the people who need it the most. Okay, so that's so that one is, if you needed something like that today, you could apply and you might get into more. Yeah. Okay. Is that it? Okay. Well, thank you, Barry. Oh, sorry.
That respite. How do you apply for that?
Through the system-wide admission and discharge. So what happens is you phone that number, 766-7200, and you say, I'd like to be assessed, okay, or have somebody assessed. They'll come out and assess them, and you're caring for them in their home, and say, I'd like respite care. And so then they say, oh, okay, you qualify or you don't.
And is there a waiting list for that?
No, actually, we have different beds in our facility, and there's you just book it nice and early. And so, because remember, people are only coming in for a week at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's lots of space there. Okay. And now a home our size, another home our size in the city, would probably have maybe 20, 30 admissions a year. Our home has 500 because of the different programs that we're serving. So just think of the variety of services provided. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. For
I don't think I'll let my wife know about the respite care in case she thinks that could happen now. We want to thank you very much. This information is so vitally important, and as I, from the back, looked around, I know that some of you have had to deal with short-term, long-term respite care for family members, for friends, and our family too in December. You know, you're in Calgary, and you're hearing words hospice, you're hearing, you know, chronic hospital, and without that information, you're just really at a loss. And to hear all of this information, I hope many of you will share this with friends and family. Merv, bless his heart, has recorded this, and no doubt it'll appear on our website. And you can invite your friends to go to the website and hear all of this vitally important information. I want to thank Merv for bringing the dessert today, and also for, I whispered in the kitchen, I said, you're hired. He was clearing a lot from the table, and he also has designed our church website. So anytime you want to refer friends to a luncheon speaker, you'll find the recordings on our website.